This is Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. It's Friday, and you know I save the best for last. Revis Witham is with me today. He is the author of the Red River Mystery Series, and he's come along with some really fun stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about Unraveled, his new book. He's got some old-timey words and expressions we're going to listen to, because I just love me a cowboy, as you all know, and we're going to talk about a new series. So stay right here with me, because we're getting going now. Everyone, to Authors on the Air. I don't even know where to start to tell you about Revis Witham's bio, but I would like you to take a moment when you can and go to reviszwortham.com and read all about him. He's absolutely hysterical when he talks about his life and how he got started writing. And suffice it to say that his byline is on over 2,000 newspapers around the country. So we're going to talk about that too. But first, a total honor and pleasure to welcome back to Authors on the Air, author Revis Witham. Hi, Rev. How are you today?
I'm outstanding. How are you doing, Pam?
I am doing so well that you're here. I am thrilled. It's been way too long. We shouldn't have to wait, you know, this long between chats on the radio. I demand that you come back in 6 months, okay?
Well, whatever you say, nice lady, I will do it.
There you go. Congratulations on Unraveled. Wow. 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 What a book.
You like it.
It's just an amazing book. I like this one best of all of them, I think.
Really?
I don't know why that is, but this one really stayed with me. And, you know, I like all your work, as you well know. But for those who've been living in a foreign country, will you please tell us about the Red River Mystery Series and bring us up to date with Unraveled?
Oh, sure. The Red River Mysteries are set in far northeast Texas back in the 1960s. The first one, The Rock Hole, began with 1964. And they're based on the Parker family, who lives in this very rural area. Ned Parker is a constable and a farmer, and he has two very precocious grandchildren. And there's a lot that goes on in this strange, quiet little town, which you would think would be this glorious little place to grow up, and it is, but at the same time, the world continues to intrude on it. It's all based on my life growing up down up on the Red River when I was a child, and it's very isolated up there, but at the same time, you know, back in the 60s, which were very traumatic time, and there was a lot of turmoil going on, much like today, the world kept coming in. You know, at night, we would, even though we were so far away from everything, at night you would get the body count from Vietnam, and we would hear about the civil rights movement. And so that world clashes with a very simple, small world where people are just trying to wrest the living from the land. And so it began with the Rock Hole in 2011. Unraveled just came out. That's the sixth book of the series. It just came out in October. And Unraveled, Pam, you said you liked it. I'm thinking you might have liked it because it came full circle back to the original book. It was more about the people in that town, and it did not get out of Lamar County very much. And a lot of people have told me that that's one of the things they loved about The Rock Hole when it first came out. And it was, you know, it was a starred review in one of Kirkus's top 12 for 2011. So
I know.
I've been very fortunate.
But every one of your books has been reviewed, starred. I mean, you're being I mean, your name is mentioned along with Joe Lansdale, who has been a guest on the show. I know that you've been mentioned with, you know, reminiscent of Donald Westlake, who in this past couple of weeks, everyone is talking about him. He seems to be a mentor. Harper Lee, Elmore Leonard, you kind of do it all. And I like the fact that your books are also very funny. You have some really humorous moments. I mean, I'm glad because these are, you know, small town mysteries and enemies, you know, neighborly enemies and so on. Mm-hmm. The Hatfields and McCoys type of stuff can get pretty nasty. Yeah. They can get pretty ugly. So I like that you infuse everything with a little bit of humor and keep it all in context. But I would imagine just from reading your bio that you would have a hard time not using humor somewhere along the way.
Well, I do. And I actually have to, after I finish a draft, I sometimes have to come in and take some of it out because it can almost get too light or it takes away. I began writing humor back in 1988 for small newspapers here in Texas. And it's an outdoor humor column, which, you know, people, you know, say, well, outdoor columns is about hunting and fishing. Yeah, well, it is, but at the same time, it's about the quirky people that are involved in all that kind of thing and all the adventures that we have. And so that has, you know, that's been running for 28 years now in newspapers, and I still do it every week. And I also write humor for the Texas Fishing Game magazine once a month. So that has migrated over into the novels themselves, which is always fun because it breaks the tension up sometime. And, you know, we all, no matter what is going on around us, you know, we're always cracking jokes or looking at the lighter side
sure.
of things. You do that so that you don't cry sometimes. And so that, you know, it made its way into Unraveled also. And so it's a part of these books. And a lot of people will call or send me emails and texts and say, you know, I love the funeral scene. It's one of the funniest things I've read in a long time. And the rock hole. And
right.
Unraveled has a humor scene in it also. So that helps buoy the storyline also. You know, in Unraveled, at the very first of the book, Top, the young man that's the narrator, he says small towns are like stock ponds. We call them tanks here in Texas. But you look at the surface and they're very calm. But once you look under the surface, there's a lot of life and death going on under there. And that's
right.
what these
exactly.
books are about.
I want to ask you about the three stages of your writing, because I had forgotten that I had read this a while ago. And you credit your former librarian, Miss Rosalie Russell, for turning you on to reading. And then you've since named your stages, the three stages to becoming a writer. Will you talk about those, please? Because I think that we underestimate the power of librarians. I don't, you know, you were an educator for a long time. Are libraries in schools still relevant and necessary, and are they used?
Yeah, they are used. Both of my daughters are teachers, and I was a 35-year educator. My English teacher, high school English teacher daughter, tells me that the kids are always in the library. They still like books. They still will sit down and read books, even though they have all
that.
These electronic devices. They love books. And, you know, Miss Rosalie Russell was she lit my fuse so many, many years ago, giving me the books to read and encouraging me to write even in the elementary school. And I tried. I wrote these little stories and then I met when I got to high school, I met another teacher, Miss Adams, who completely set me free and said, you can write anything you want to. All you have to do is write, but you have to read also. And I read all the time. If you're not
reading,
I'm not
reading. You are never without a book.
Oh, no.
I don't think I've ever seen you without a book, Rev.
Right.
When we bump into each other at conferences, you have a book with you all the time.
Yeah.
I'm like that, too. You know, I was getting a medical test, and I actually was reading during the test. The lady said, boy, that must be a good book. And I said, well, they are. You know, I'm really fortunate to have a nice selection of books. And I happen to be reading Mike Conley, so, you know,
it's going to be a great book. Great author.
So,
great guy and a great author.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I know, and I know you guys are friends, too. So your three stages were first called Love of Reading, and you were introduced to the Cowboy Sam series, which I love. And then you you said the secondary infection, which you call it, is called book collecting. And anybody who knows you knows that you have an outstandingly beautiful library with a massive, massive walls of books in there.
I just
want to know, are your books alphabetically listed, or are they just are they up there by genre, or are they haphazard? Please tell me you're not OCD and not alpha.
I am OCD. They're alphabetical, and they are on the shelf from the first novel that the author wrote to the second to the third. So you can see their progression. I'm that guy. I have to do
that. You're the library guy,
I am the library. And I worked in a library. I worked in a library when
I know
was in
you're a page.
I was a page in a library. That's what they call it. I shelved books. And I spent more of my time reading than shelving. But, you know, I just have to do that so I can find the books, too. You know, and if I want to reach for a book and it's on the shelf, I know it's exactly where it should be. So I will do it. But I'm not the guy. I am not the guy that does that. When I sit down to write, I don't have an outline. I am completely opposite when I'm writing. I don't outline. I don't even know what I'm going to do. From the moment I start typing until the end of the novel, I don't know where it's going, what's going to happen from moment to moment. I don't even know how it's going to end. And so, you know, that I'm polar opposite. But I'm a Gemini, too. You know, I was born in May. I'm a Gemini. So there's two of me in here, I guess.
There really is. And by the way, for listeners, the third stage of this, he calls it the advanced stage, is the need to write. So, you know, Rev, you talk a lot about your friendship with John Gilstrap, whom I also adore. He's just a wonderful writer. I like everything he does. And he gave you some really good advice, and you guys have remained the best of friends. What did you learn from him when you sat down with him that many years ago at Sleuth Fest?
Oh my Lord, girl! He's just a wonderful friend of mine, and he has taught me more than I expected. I thought I knew what I was doing, and I did not. So, I mean, from the first moment John and I sat down and started talking, he offered advice, and I listened because he'd been in the business for so much longer than I had. And one of his first pieces of advice was to fire my agent and get another one because he said she's not the agent that you need. And so I learned after a while, and I listened to him, and that helped me advance. Also, I got a wonderful agent in New York, and they Ann Hawkins there with the John Hawkins agency. She's taken such good care of me as John has. John and I, we've opened up to each other. We are very honest with each other, and when he sees something, he will tell me, and that's how I learn. I'm not going to say I know what I'm doing. I'm feeling my way as I go because there's a lot to learn in this business, and I still make mistakes. My gosh, I was just cleaning up the draft of my new thriller series. It came back from the editor with her comments on it the past couple of weeks, and I thought I really knew what I was doing until I sat down and realized I had used some words over and over, which is one of the things I said over and over. I used over and over 28 times in the manuscript. You know, how does that creep into the manuscript many times? So, yeah, you strip those out. I stripped out thousands of adverbs, and I didn't even realize I'd put them in. I try to avoid those at all costs. And so you learn as you go. Yeah, I have learned so much. Yeah.
Do you have I know that you like writing, and I know that you like the practice. You like to sit down and write, don't you? Because
I love
you're doing it so much.
Yeah.
So When you decide to start a new book, is there a rhyme or reason when you say, okay, I flushed out an idea in my head? Does it just come to you like that? Or do you say, all right, I put out a book 6 months ago. It's time for me to sit down and start working on the next one. I mean, how does that happen for you?
Well, I have no earthly idea when I sit down to start. That's what I was. Yeah, I sit down, open up the screen up, get that little blank page in the cursor, and I title it Untitled because I don't know what it's going to be. So I'll write Untitled, and then I put my fingers on the keys, and it's like you're writing on your computer, and you're drafting stuff, and it's coming up in front of me. So I am literally reading it as I'm writing it at the same time. I don't know what people are going to say. I don't know what people are going to do. I don't even know where the story is going as I go through it. And
wow.
There are a lot of authors that tell me I'm absolutely insane, that I'll be 60,000-70,000 words into a novel, and I don't know how it's going to end or what's going to happen. But it has worked for me through 7 books now, including the new Sunny Hawk book, and I've been very fortunate. It's funny. My wife will come through, and the other day I was laughing, and she said, "What's so funny?" And I said, "You're not going to believe what Isaac Reeder just said." And she looked at me like I was crazy. She said, "Well, of course you know what it's your book." I said, "No, I have no idea. He just said something, and it struck me funny." So I just follow along until I get to the end. And in the first book, in The Rock Hole, I truly did not know who the bad guy was until he was revealed in a scene, and someone opened their eyes and looked over and saw who the bad guy was. And I was absolutely shocked myself. I thought it was somebody else.
When you started writing the Red River series, you had your basic set of characters in place. So The Rock Hole was the first book, and you knew who your main characters were and who the secondary characters were, and when they were coming and going on the canvas. Did you know everything you needed to know about them after writing the first book, or did you learn more as you wrote more books?
I learned a lot more about them. It's like reading a biography now. Top, the young man in this book has trouble in issues that he's having to deal with, and those issues are being revealed. Ned Parker, who is Top's granddad, and he's the constable, in the book that I'm writing right now, that I'm working on called Goldust, which hopefully will be out next year. There are things that are revealed about Ned Parker that I didn't even have a glimmer of a clue back when I first started writing the first book. So the characters have evolved. It's like, and I had a great compliment from a reader. He's told me, and he's an elderly gentleman in his 80s, and he said that he loves for my books to come out because he says, now these people have become family to me. And I learn more about them every time I read a new book because you reveal more. And so that's what's happening. The characters are growing. They're changing, especially the kids. They were 10 years old in the first book. When I started, now they're 14 years old. You know, and the kids change dramatically in those 4 years, and they change even faster as they reach adolescence. And so what I'm doing is I'm following along and just learning about the family as everyone else does.
When you're writing, Rev, do you kind of block everything else out, or can you have noise around you? Do you have music on? Are you easily distracted so you have to be quiet? Are you one of those guys who could write in a coffee shop?
I can't, and I have. I've written in airports. I've written in places where people would think it was absolutely impossible to write. I'll sit down and open it up, and I can write. I can knock out a couple of pages with a family watching a football game, you know, or an entire chapter.
Oh, wow.
I wrote while the kids were watching the World Series. So my son-in-laws are yelling and screaming, and I'm typing away because I get into the zone, I get into the book, and I don't have to have it absolutely quiet. I can write when it's quiet, but at the same time, I always have music on. I'm listening. These are the 1960s, so I'm listening to period music for the most part, and that music makes its way into the books because I'll refer to a song or something. Because, you know, music is the great time machine. Anytime you hear a song,
it sure is.
You go right back to where you can. And so the music plays a key. In fact, a reviewer asked me not too long ago about the book Before Unraveled. They said that Dark Places should have been released with a CD because of all the musical references in there. So, but when I get to the end and I'm cranking up and this is the big finish and my books are known for big flashy, you know, shoot 'em up finishes.
Yeah.
I crank up AC/DC and I just hammer away.
You don't really. Really?
I do. Yes,
that
I do.
That is too funny. I did not know that about you.
Yeah,
I did not know that about you. That is too funny. I'm stunned by that. Well, see, then you're not the cowboy I thought you were, or else you're a cowboy with a heavy metal bent. So that's okay, too. Let's tell listeners, take a break from book talk for just a moment because I want to talk about Sonny Hawk and I want to talk about Kensington. I want to talk about a lot of different things with you, but you came with a list today that I requested, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah, I did. I did.
Can you tell everybody what the list is about? Because you know I love this part.
it's about our past is what it's about. The Red River books, again, you know, they're set in the 60s. Well, the characters in there, the older folks, lived through the 20s and the Depression and World War II. And these are the descendants of the Appalachian people that moved down and moved out of the mountains through Arkansas and settled up on the Red River in that bottom land and to raise crops. And so they brought that language with them, and then language developed as they were down there, and these what we call old-timey sayings started cropping up in my books. And I was being true to the characters and true to the land and true to the people, and so they speak the way the old folks, and I'm now the old folks, I'm 62, but this is the way the old folks talked when I was a kid back in the 60s. And so on my Facebook page, I have two Facebook pages, but on those pages, we talk about the old-timey word of the day or the old-timey phrase of the day. And it's things that I grew up with as absolutely normal, but I did not realize that it was dying out until a few years ago. And I had my daughters in the car, and we were getting ready to get on the road, pull out on the highway, and there were a lot of cars. And I said, well, it looks like somebody let the gate down. And neither one of them understood the reference. And when you're out on a farm, you let the gate down, the cows get out, so you've got to wait till they run past, you know. So that's when my daughter said, my youngest daughter, Megan, said, Dad, you need to do on your Facebook page, you need to do the old-timey word of the day because you're always saying these things we don't understand and explain them. And so I try to get one up every day. I can't do it because I'm on the road a lot. But we have old-timey words and old-timey phrases that we say. You know, my father-in-law just today or over the weekend said, you know, we had a big family gathering. He said, we need to have plenty. We have sweet iced tea here in Texas. He said, well, we have a crop of thirsty people, so we need more iced tea. Well, you know, most people don't know what a crop of thirsty people is. So if something happens and we refer to somebody making a mistake, we don't say, well, he made a mistake. Here in this part of the world, we say, well, he played the devil, didn't he? And that's our way of saying, you know, there was a mistake. And the old folks would all, the ladies didn't swear when I was growing up. You know, these were farm wives. And so if they were taken aback, they'd say, well, I swanny. You know, that was their swear word, I swanny or I swan. And it was a nice way, or if they're talking to someone, and some lady or gentleman does something that they probably shouldn't have done, or they think it's silly, they'll say, well, bless his heart, or bless her heart.
Right.
Well, that's just kind of a way to insult somebody very graciously, and you get away with it, you know, because you're being nice about it. My wife is younger than I am, but she grew up on a farm, so she I guess about 2 or 3 weeks ago said that you know if somebody that was coming to a dinner that we were having, if she didn't have a certain thing on the table, the lady would have a rigger. Well, a rigger is just an old fashioned way of saying another way of saying she'll have a spell. These are ways of saying that she'll just lose, you know, she'll be angry or upset or whatever. So these old-time words get a lot of people, and they haven't heard them for years, I was talking to my cousin the other day, and he said he slipped. He was out working cows on a steep slope, and he slipped and fell and cut a flip. Well, most people, you know, his exact words were, "I cut me a flip and then landed hard on the ground." Well, you know, if you cut your flip, then you flip over. We've been in the midst of all the presidential elections, and my granddad would always say, if he's a politician, he's as crooked as a dog's hind leg. And so, you know, that it's pretty self-explanatory right there.
You're not kidding.
In the book,
You use them in the book, which I adore that part, because it makes it's authentic that way. But you know what made me think about it tonight was when I was rereading your bio, and when John said to you, "Do you mind if I offer you some advice?" And you said, "Go ahead on." And I know what you meant by that, you know, because and John says to you, "I don't know what that means, but if it means yes, I want to tell you something." And I love that. I love that expression. Not that growing up in Miami was the South and we didn't hear those, but my next door neighbor, who is my longest best friend in the world, we've known each other since we were four or five, I don't know, she knows the exact amount, but her parents were from the South. Because Miami's just geographically south, but it's definitely not the south.
Sure.
And we heard a lot of I used to listen to them speak, and they had their southern accent, and they also had all those expressions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my folks were from Massachusetts, and they had some expressions, too, that were kind of odd. So, you know, I got pounded from the south and the north, I have to tell you, and it was really interesting. You know? But I want to take a break just for a second here. I am giving away a copy of Unraveled, Revis Wortham's new book. It is just a spectacular book. To the first person who calls in, the number is 347-633-9609. Give us a call. I want to remind you that this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC. My guest is my dear friend and fabulous writer, Revis Wortham. We are talking about Unraveled, the latest in his Red River Mystery series. We're also going to talk about a new series that Revis has started writing, and it will be with Kensington, the nice, wonderful publisher. Tell us about Sunny Hawk, because this is brand new.
It is.
Right?
And it hasn't even hit the shelves yet. We are in the copy editing phase right now for this book, which will be out in July. And the Sunny Hawk book is my first venture into thriller writing. I've always loved thrillers, and I love to read them, and I know so many thriller writers, and again, John Gilstrap, that we keep talking about, John said, you know, you really need to write a thriller. And so, once again, I took his advice, and Kensington liked the idea. They picked it up. They gave me a contract on the Sunny Hawk series, and my Red River series takes place in northeast part of the state of Texas. The first Sunny Hawk book takes place out in the Big Bend region of southwest Texas. And if you don't know anything about Texas, you know, the one thing you do know is it's a huge state. It takes all day to drive across. Mm-hmm. And Texas,
sure,
is in we have five different geographical regions. And so I wanted to get out of East Texas. I wanted to go out to West Texas. My character is a Texas Ranger in a small town that is based on two or three small towns out there. I just kind of gathered up and squeezed into a ball, and they became Ballard, Texas. And so in the first book, which will be out in July, terrorists take over the local courthouse with an idea of to bring down the government through a backdoor move. And so we have terrorists in West Texas, and they take over a courthouse, and there's a classroom of kids in there. But what they don't realize is that one of the people that they have locked into the building is the Texas Ranger, Sonny Hawk. And so Sonny works from the inside to take these guys out, while the local sheriff and actually the townspeople work from the outside, because all this is happening in the middle of a blinding snowstorm out in West Texas. It's a very isolated area. And I wasn't sure they would actually work with the idea would work until I talked to the local weatherman here, and I asked him. I said, "Does it snow enough in Ballard or in West Texas, or has it ever snowed enough to lock a town down for an entire day?" And he goes, "Oh, I can tell you how we'll do that, and that can happen. You can have a 100-year snowstorm because it happened 130 years ago." So I wrapped all that together, and that became the first Sonny Hawk book called Hawk's Prey. And I'm working on the second one now. The first two chapters will be in the back of that book, and that one will come out in about a year from July, and that's Hawk's War. So the Sonny Hawk, this is a Texas Ranger character that goes back to the roots of the old Texas Rangers. You know, the Rangers are wonderful men and women here in the state of Texas.
Yes.
They're revered by us all. And but I wanted to get away from anything anyone has ever done about the Rangers. And so we've got a little twist of our own here that will take it back to the one Ranger, one riot way of thinking back in the old days. And I think it's going to work.
But it is a contemporary book. I mean, it's
yes,
set
it
in today's times. So,
yes.
And just to explain that, the Red River series is set, as Reva said earlier, in the 60s. So 1960s and forward. So will you continue to write Red River while you're writing Hawk?
Oh, yes. In fact, I have an unlimited contract with the folks at Poison Pen Press. They said as long as I wanted to write the Red River series, they would publish. And so that series could go for years, hopefully, as long as it's successful. For them and for myself, I think we'll keep it going.
Yeah, I was a little bit nervous reading the book because I thought it sounds like a goodbye almost. It felt like everything was being wrapped up. But I know that there is so much more for you to explore. So I was just curious if you continued to plan to write it. Do you have any desire to write a standalone, Revis?
I do. I have a couple of just a little tiny bits of an idea to start a standalone. I would like to do that, but it just hasn't grabbed hold of me yet. It's not there. One of these days, I think an idea is going to come along that I can get a hold of and develop into a full standalone. But I've written a couple of books that I kind of like, but they're more like a lot of people call bottom drawer books. You write them, but they're just not there yet. And so you put them away, and you may tinker with them, or you just may abandon them and go on to the next one. But I do hope to get a standalone out sometime soon in the next few years. Yeah, I do.
Any idea what you want to write about?
You know what? The only thing that I might lean toward right now, and this is just in the back of my head, I might lean toward a true Western. I have never written a true Western. The people tell me, the reviewers tell me that my Red River series are modern Westerns, and I never even considered that until True West magazine listed Dark Places as one of their top 12 modern Westerns of 2015. And so I thought, well, yeah, I guess I am writing Westerns, so maybe I can go ahead and do something with that. And I've always been fascinated with Westerns anyway. I love Louis L'Amour and Max Brand and some of those old guys that I read growing up. And so that may be a venue that I'm going to explore at some point.
You know, I always considered you a Western writer too, but only because of, I think it was because of the era that you wrote in, and because it was a small town, Texas. And you could almost consider it a modern day cowboy story, modern day cowboy story, even though it was set in the '60s. So, you know, that's a credit to you that we all see so many different things in your books. Reminds me how talented you are. Are you still enjoying doing your newspaper column and writing in the magazine after all these years? Are you still having fun with it?
Yes, I am. And I, like I said, I've written a weekly column since 1988. And so, you know, I always said if it ever got to be a burden, I would quit. And it's not. I have fun with them. They're about the guys I hunt, fish, and camp and explore with. Or on occasion they'll take off and be recollection stories, as I call them, the old reminiscent stories of when I was a child and hunting and exploring the outdoors and fishing with my dad and my granddad. So those come up and we'll look back at the olden days, as we used to say when I was a kid, and they're explored in the newspaper columns. Yeah, but they've been very well received. Now, I lost a lot of newspapers when I was, you know, the first thing that happened when newspapers began to fold back, 20 years ago or 15 years ago when the internet came in, they lost a lot of columnists. So I lost a lot of papers there, but at the same time I picked up magazines. And so, you know, like I write a little bit longer story for the magazine each month, and I'm having fun with it. And as long as I'm enjoying it, I'll continue to do it. Yeah, when it quits being fun, then I'm done.
Then you're stopping, right?
Yeah.
Well, that
yeah.
makes sense. So what's next for you? I know you're writing, but besides your writing life, what's happening with you? Are you staying in town? Are you going to conferences someplace? Are you coming back to Sleuth Fest in February?
Yeah, I am not scheduled for Sleuth Fest in February. My wife is going to retire in January, and so we're going to hit more conferences than I have been able to attend. If somebody could invite me back to Sleuth Fest, there's so many of them now that it's hard to pick and choose. I'm going to Killer Nashville.
Of course,
you know, Thriller Fest, you know, Left Coast Crimes in Hawaii this year, so we're going to go to that one and explore out there a little bit and take a look at the country. Me, I might take all that may be my standalone. It may be a Texan out in Hawaii somewhere for an adventure. I don't know, but
to Boucher in Toronto.
That one's up in the air right now. I'm not sure.
Let me put a bug in your ear then, okay?
Okay.
Next year, not this year, next year, it's in St. Pete, right up the road from me. So you have to come to BoucherCon in St. Pete, Florida.
Oh, of course.
It's
spectacular. And then it's going to be here.
Beautiful.
It's
going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We'll swap hometowns.
I talk to a lot of the authors, and we'll say, "Where are you going here or there?" And then a lot of times that might drive where you get to go to or you want to go and hang out with your friends.
Yeah.
The authors have opened their arms up and welcomed me into the fold, which has been wonderful. They've all been great to me. To a person, after I meet them, they will say, "How can I help you?" And that makes you feel good, and it makes you feel worthy when someone you've been reading for so many years says, "I like your work. How can I help you out? Can I write a blurb for you?" That's the writing world, and they're all great people.
You know, the first year we met was at Thriller Fest, I think 3 or 4 years ago, I can't remember, but I was stunned at the collegial group of writers, not just with each other, how everybody was with each other, but, you know, going there as a reader, because I went up as MJ Rose's guest for when they still had FanFest, people are so nice, you know, I was so stunned, and, you know, but it is such a great group of people. Of course, for all of you who've never been to a book conference, if there's ever one in your town, just go sit in the bar, get there very early in the afternoon, because toward the end of panels, every author that you've ever imagined will show up and be there eventually, because that's the big socializer. And I got to tell you a funny story about Boucher when we were in North Carolina. The man who was the general manager of the bar in one of the hotels was standing up on a riser watching all the authors in the bar. And he was smiling, and I said, "What are you smiling about?" He said, "These are writers." He said, "This is the loudest crowd I've ever heard." He said, "They're not quietly talking about books." And I said, "Oh, how they're quiet in their caves. They got to come out and socialize." You know,
it's just
so funny. People have a perception that you're going to be these introverted little mice, you know, but you get out and you see your friends out there.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, and the writing community has been very good to me. I'm very blessed to know a lot of people.
They all love you.
And I appreciate it. Thanks. I appreciate it.
They all
appreciate it. So, well,
thank you. Know,
the
truth is, even the huge best blockbuster writers are just down to earth people. We were in New Orleans for a conference just a few months ago.
Right.
Yeah, for Boucher,
right.
And I got on an elevator, and Lee Child was standing there, and he says he looked at me and he said, "You know, we pass each other in the hall, we say hello, we don't ever have time to have a conversation." And so that was one of the rare times that no one was around, and we just visited for a while, like the old fashioned word that we use. And it was a pleasure to talk to Lee, because he's just a wonderful guy, and
he's such a nice man.
He's
soft spoken, actually, when you're having a conversation. And mm-hmm. I always, whenever I have a photo of being with him, he's so tall and lean, and I always think, if he bulked up a little bit, he could play Reacher himself, because he really looks like Reacher. You know, he could be Reacher. So, but one of the nicest men ever. It's just, I was, you know, afraid to go up and ask him if I could have a picture and get his signature on a book. And he was like, "Sure, whatever you want, you know, no problem." I mean, all of y'all did that for me. It was amazing to me. So it's no wonder that I love authors. You are my celebrities, and I can't thank you enough. And you, my friend, particularly, you've been very generous with your time with me. And so I'm going to hold you to coming back when Hawk's Prey is out. And, you know, I'll be one of your first readers on that for sure. I hope you and your wife and your family have the most glorious holiday.
Yes.
This year.
Yeah, same to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you so much for being with me, Revis Wortham. You are truly a gem, and I'm so glad we're friends.
You're wonderful. It's been an absolute pleasure. Always enjoy talking to you, man.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And you and I'll talk soon again, okay?
Have
a great year, and happy. We'll talk again in 2017.
Yes, we will, if not before.
There you go. Thanks, Rev. Have a good night.
Thank you, nice lady.
Sure thing. Bye-bye. And there you go. One of the best guys in the book business today. I'm very, very lucky to have him. On Monday is my last day for a little while, but at 3 o'clock in the afternoon Eastern, and that would be noon Pacific, I am speaking to Peter May, one of the most prolific and highly awarded authors of our time. He is an incredible man. He's been a journalist, a television and movie screenwriter. He writes books. His list of awards takes 2 pages. I couldn't even post them all. And then later that night, I'm talking to my friend Anthony, and other award-winning author. Matt Coyle is going to talk to us about Night Fishers, his third book in the Rick Cahill series. So please join me on Monday, and I hope you have a delightful weekend. Go and get Revis's book. You're going to love it. Thanks so much for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.